This is Ana Carmo with your news. Discriminatory laws cast long shadows of exclusion, subordination and social stigma, and we must commit to breaking down the barriers these laws can create to embrace inclusivity. That's according to Justice Edwin Cameron, appointed by Nelson Mandela as the first openly gay judge on South Africa's Constitutional Court and widely seen as a hero for his fight to end all forms of inequality and exclusion. In what he described as a very vicious circle, Justice Cameron, who is HIV positive, said that people who are marginalized or stigmatized often don't have access to health services, in stark contrast to the Sustainable Development Goal call to leave no one behind. While in New York for the High-Level Political Forum on Sustainable Development, Judge Cameron spoke to Liz Cafidi, noting that it's people themselves who are the most powerful agents for change.
Discrimination is a terrible barrier in society, and discrimination is often expressed in the condemnation that the criminal law brings to marginalized social groups like people like myself, gay men, LGBTI groups, men who have sex with men, injecting drug users, sex workers, people with HIV like myself as well, living with HIV. So through social barriers, we prevent development, we prevent progress, we prevent the well-being that inclusion and acceptance brings. And we prevent people from being participants in society through the condemnation of the criminal law.
How do the criminal laws in South Africa leave people behind?
Well, let me go back a bit in history. The main feature of apartheid, apart from its cruelty and its irrationality being based purely on race, was that it was a legal system. It was a system of legally erected barriers of exclusion, separation, and subordination. Where you could work, where you could live, whom you could be with, were regulated through the law. So we had terrible experience in South Africa of the negative effect of criminal laws in marginalizing and excluding the majority of our population who were black people. Since democracy, we, of course, have renounced that, but yesterday, in the session on SDG 10, which is about equality, the South African delegate was speaking about the long shadow of those laws. So by marginalizing and excluding here, not black people, but talking about sex workers, drug users, people with HIV, men who have sex with men, LGBTI populations, people with HIV, we are erecting barriers that for years into the future will create shadows of exclusion, shadows of subordination, shadows of social stigma. That's why we have to break them down now. We have to commit to breaking them down now. We have to commit to non-discrimination. We have to commit to laws that are inclusive.
How do we do that? Through the legal system?
It's often a complex process. We've got to involve social actors, civil society, the media, legal groups. That's why the International Commission of Jurists, that's looking at the nature and effect and impact of criminal laws, is very important. We have to assemble coalitions of people. We've also got to change people's minds. We've got to persuade people that these laws are irrational. They're not evidence-based. They are contra-evidence. We fought a gigantic struggle in South Africa with President Thabo Mbeki, who didn't believe the evidence on AIDS. And now we've got to say to people, but the evidence shows that the war against drugs is hugely costly and counterproductive. You're not just wasting money, you are destroying the judiciary and the police force through this wasteful misdirection of the criminal law. So we have to persuade people on the basis of evidence.
How does the apparent trend of cracking down on civil spaces around the world affect marginalized people?
Well, they affect them very badly. Let me give you two examples. Only this week, two of the most prominent human rights lawyers in India were raided at their home, Indira Jai Singh and Anand Grover. Let me give you an example from last week. The LGBTI march in Turkey was waterbombed and destroyed by the police. So it has a terribly inhibiting effect. It has a disabling effect. It has a stigmatizing effect. It has a fear-inducing effect. And none of that is good for sustainable development.
How does sexual orientation put people at risk of accessing health care?
When you stigmatize people, when you make them fearful and ashamed of their sexual orientation, instead of encouraging the correct belief, which is that sexual orientation lies across a spectrum. And 5% of us, like me, are gay or lesbian. And another 5% are maybe somewhere. And 90% of the population is not LGBTI oriented in any way. When you don't encourage that normal, proper, sound, moral belief, you instill in people fear, you instill in them shame, you instill in them inhibition. They don't get access to health services. Men who have sex with men who don't identify as gay, who can't identify as gay, who can't rationally and normally say, I can seek a sexual partner, but do it covertly, do it outside perhaps a marriage to someone of the opposite sex, all those people don't access proper prevention treatment. They don't access diagnosis. They don't access self-protective, health-seeking behaviors. So it's a very vicious circle.
You are an openly gay man living with HIV in South Africa, where lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people have the same rights as non-LGBT people. Unfortunately, these rights are not enjoyed in other African countries. What measures can be taken to reverse this?
We have a huge problem in Africa, my beautiful continent, my beautiful self-injuring continent, where more than 30 countries still criminalize LGBTI people. Not just criminalizing them, arrest them, beat them up, terrify them. Just last week, a South African performer, an openly and elaborately and expressively gay South African performer, was not allowed into Zambia by government, who condemned him for being gay. The best way how we can do it is through visibility. And that's what's happening across Africa. Despite the terrible penalties and risks, black Africans throughout sub-Saharan Africa are saying, we are LGBTI, we are lesbian, we are gay, we are transgender, we are intersex. And when that visibility happens, you change the minds of parents, of cousins, of friends, of colleagues. You change the minds of the whole country. And that's why we have to support local groups in Africa. In Botswana, a great court victory was achieved just this month when a 3-judge panel of the High Court of Botswana ruled that the criminalization of same-sex sex practices is against the Botswana constitution. Who brought the case? Legabibo. Legabibo is a coalition of lesbian, gays, intersex Botswanans. And they also brought the case requiring government to register them as an organization 3 years ago. So it's the Botswana people themselves who said, this is us, we here, we want our rights, we are protected by the constitution. That's the most powerful agent for change.
You've been a judge for 25 years. What are some of the constitutional advances that you've seen across the African continent, and what are the biggest challenges you foresee?
I think the advances I've seen have been in the conceptualization of women's equality. It is now much better accepted, if not always enacted in practice, that women are equal, that women deserve a place in the presidency, in the cabinet, in the boardroom, in the executive management of institutions and organizations. The challenges, I think, are still tremendous inequality, corruption, not just minor street-level corruption, but criminal corruption like we've seen in South Africa, where criminal gangs try to take over the whole state, even at the very highest level sometimes. So I think those are big challenges, and crime, of course. We have a very violent society in South Africa, and I think those are enormous challenges to achieving sustainable development.